Tonight was exactly the kind of pay-per-view that AEW needed to have at a time when business has not been booming the way it was earlier in the year, when there has been a lot of drama and a lot of controversy and a lot of questionable booking decisions. They needed a strong show tonight in Newark, and a strong show is what they got. AEW Full Gear will go down, I think, as one of the best overall AEW pay-per-views that the company has ever produced. And it comes at a time where, like I said, they really needed a boost. And now they have, as their world heavyweight champion, a 26-year-old man who has been positioned as the future of this company, the future of this industry. A man who you can now say truly is one of the young pillars of the company, is now leading the company as the world heavyweight champion. That, of course, is Maxwell Jacob Friedman. He is the new AEW World Heavyweight Champion with a win over Jon Moxley in the main event tonight. Wouldn't you know, it was with the assist from one William Regal. And I said it a few weeks ago. Actually, I said it after the promo segment in the ring with MJF and Regal. When they did that segment with Jon Moxley in the ring, and Regal is standing there, and he looks into Regal's eyes, and they're making fun of MJF, and Moxley says to Regal, he says, he calls himself the devil. And he says, well, I've looked in the devil's eyes. And he says this as he is looking in the eyes of the real devil himself, William Regal. It was just, it was too perfect. The way they shot that whole segment, everything about that segment, it just screamed that William Regal was going to pass the brass knucks to MJF in the finish, because MJF had already said he was not going to use the Dynamite Diamond Ring. But he never said nothing about the knucks. And now MJF is the world champion. We also have a brand new AEW interim women's champion. Her name is Jamie Hayter. And everybody in Newark, New Jersey was very happy to see Jamie Hayter as the champion. She came in there as the clear fan favorite in that match. And Tony Khan, he read the room to his credit. He knew going in that the crowd was going to be heavily in support of Jamie Hayter. I didn't think they would do it, but they did, and the crowd tonight was very happy to see it. That was one of the best AEW women's matches I've ever seen tonight, with Jamie Hayter and Toni Storm went out there tonight on that pay-per-view, and both of them had the best match that they have had in their respective careers so far in AEW. That was the kind of match I was hoping to see the two of them have. After a very lackluster build, they went out there and they knocked it out of the park. But that was not the only surprising decision on the show tonight that shocked me when I saw it. And hey, shout out to, we got Emiliana coming in with the 1999 Super Chat. As I see myself looking like an idiot there in that Super Chat. Thank you, Emiliana. I'm going to be reading all of your message. I'm sure you have a lot to say about this show. We're going to get to all your Super Chats, and you'll see them popping up on your screen there. But that was not the only outcome tonight that shocked me. The other outcome that shocked me is that we have Death Triangle still as the Trios champions. The Elite made their big comeback tonight for the first time since Brawl Out. We got to see Kenny Omega. We got to see the Young Bucks. And I thought, well, Tony Khan's going to just kind of hit the reset button and go back to the way things were after All Out. And we're going to get that Elite run that he was planning on. But he's going to make him work for it, because the Elite lose to Death Triangle tonight. But if you missed it, don't worry, because you're going to get to see it at least a few more times, possibly as many as six more times. And we'll talk about why that is. That was a decision that truly, truly shocked me. We also had Saraya back in the ring tonight for the first time in 5 years since she was forced into an early retirement, one-on-one with Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. Best thing I can say about that, at least Saraya came out of the match in one piece. I thought she looked fine. She looked healthy. She looked perfectly intact in one piece when the match was over. She made it through. Now she can worry about the next one. Not the best match of the night, but I'm very happy that she was able to get back in the ring. You could tell from the moment she walked out on the show, she was very emotional. Her family was there. Her brother flew in from the UK. He was there in the front row. So I was very happy to see her be able to go back to doing something that she has been doing since she was a little girl, and to be able to go back to it when it was taken away from her prematurely If nothing else, regardless of what you thought of the match, I thought that was one of the cool moments of the show tonight. We had a fantastic four-way for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Chris Jericho is still the champion, but he went out there. Bryan Danielson went out there. Claudio, Sammy. And they had exactly the kind of match that you would expect them to have for the very best in the company. I thought that was excellent. A lot of great matches up and down the card here tonight. But what I think is really cool, when you look at the champions roll call right now in AEW, you're going to find someone like Samoa Joe, who is the brand new TNT champion, right? Samoa Joe is hardly a rookie. Samoa Joe is hardly a homegrown talent. So you'll have Samoa Joe, and you'll find certain examples like that. We have MJF as the world champion. We have Jamie Hayter as the interim women's champion. We have the Acclaimed as the tag team champions. We have Jade Cargill as the TBS champion. We have Orange Cassidy as the All-Atlantic champion, which is, I think, still a title that is completely unnecessary. But my point is, the majority of the AEW champion, forget ROH, the majority of the AEW champions on this show now, these are AEW people. These are AEW, in most cases, homegrown, young talent that now they can build around going forward. And it's good to see people like that getting the attention. Those are the kind of people that Tony Khan needs to push and to build around as he builds a roster for the future. You have all of this veteran talent, ex-WWE talent. You've got Sting, you've got Jeff Jarrett, you've got people like that up and down the card. But it's the MJFs, it's the Sammys, it's the Darby Allins. Those are the kinds of talents that you want to build around and you want to make them into stars. And now, the vast majority of their top champions are in a position to help carry the company. And I think that's a positive thing. Tony Khan needs to take this show tonight and all the goodwill I think that people are going to have coming out of this show, because I have a feeling when we look at the Twitter poll later, the vast majority of the people are going to be giving the show a thumbs up based on what the early results of the poll that I saw. You can go vote right now, by the way, at Solomonster on Twitter. I think he needs to channel and harness this goodwill that he also had coming out of All Out before it went to hell in the scrum. Take this and build off of this. Because AEW is having a lot of trouble right now when it comes to selling tickets in certain markets and the ratings go up and down. But, you know, the rating on Wednesday night was not good, not the kind of number you want to see going into one of your biggest shows of the year. There's a lot of troubling signs right now in this company. It is not all, you know, roses and rainbows in AEW, but he has to take what he saw tonight and build on this, because there's a lot of positive things coming out of this pay-per-view. I like the show a lot. Still too long. I laugh because Tony Khan on the media call the other day said, oh, yo, you were, you know, it's going to be, it's not going to be as long as some of the other shows. Really? Really? That was not the case. He lied. He lied. But when you have a show as good as this, you can't really complain too much about that. This is, by the way, in case you couldn't figure it out, your AEW Full Gear 2022 review. I am the Solomonster. If you are new here, please hit that subscribe button. We also, of course, have Super Chats open. I know they are already coming in. You will see them popping up on screen. So you get a little bit of notoriety there. And I'll be reading them and acknowledging them as the stream goes along here. So get those on in. Also, let's aim for 500 likes on this stream if we can. And however late it may be, if we can hit 500, we'll do Be the Booker a little bit later on. We're also going to be doing something else a little bit later on, which is, I know some of you were here for the contest, because we're going to be giving away an AEW replica World Heavyweight Championship belt. In fact, the one that you see right there on your screen. One lucky winner. I'm going to be picking that winner at random a little bit later on tonight. So if you got your entries on in at WrestleRumble.com, you are in, and we'll be picking that winner a little bit later on in the stream. So we got a lot going on tonight. We got a lot going on tonight. I saw the trailer. I want to just mention this real quick before we get into all the matches here. I saw the trailer for the AEW Fight Forever game. Finally, they released more gameplay footage. I think it looks great based on what I saw. A lot of blood in the game, so you know it's an authentic AEW game. It looked like a bloodbath in this fucking game. But I think it's going to make for some fun sound-off gamer videos. The problem is we still have no release date. They keep releasing, in, you know, a little bit more gameplay footage each time, but we still have no word on how much longer we're going to have to wait to actually play this game. So who knows when the actual game will be out, but from what I saw, I thought it looked pretty good. So let's take this all the way back to the pre-show. They had the zero-hour pre-show. We had three matches on the pre-show here. It started with best friends Rocky Romero, Orange Cassidy, and a mystery partner taking on QT Marshall and The Factory. This ended up mostly as a handicap match. The fifth man on the babyface side was not present for the beginning of the match. Hey, Sean O'Hare in the chat wants to know, are we live, pal? Oh, we're live. We're very live. We're live here at almost 12:30 in the morning on the East Coast. Shout out to the East Coast. Shout out to the West Coast. Shout out to our international viewers. Everybody is welcome. Come on in. Of course, the match was building to the arrival of Danhausen as the mystery partner, a more serious side of Danhausen. QT Marshall was about to pile drive Orange Cassidy on the ring steps when all of a sudden we hear music that we're not really familiar with. It is Danhausen, and Danhausen comes out. He's got new music. He's got different gear. He has a spike in one hand, and he has a jar of what is supposed to be teeth or chiclets in the other hand. So Danhausen comes down to the ring. He hits a slingshot German on QT, a release Northern Lights suplex on Cole Carter, lariat to Aaron Solo, a snap German to Lee Johnson. Orange Cassidy catches Nick Camarado with an orange punch. Danhausen takes the jar, and he pours out some loose teeth, and he places them in Camarado's mouth and hits a pump kick for the win, so that he knocked out his teeth. Get it? See? He knocked out his teeth. The crowd liked it. What more can I say about this? This was this belonged on the pre-show. At least this wasn't on the main card. But the crowd enjoyed seeing Danhausen and Orange Cassidy. Backstage, Renee Young, or Renee Paquette. I still think of her as Renee Young. But Renee was in the back. And Renee was with Konosuke Takeshita, who is officially All Elite. There's the graphic. It's never official until you see the graphic. But yes, Takeshita is back in the States. And he thanked Tony Khan and the fans, said that he is moving to America and that he is going to be fighting for his life. Fighting for his life in AEW. I'm very happy that Takeshita is back in the States. Takeshita has been a revelation this year for somebody who really, you know, wasn't that familiar with him. I know he's been in you know, DDT for a while. Every match I saw this kid in was great. You know, he's a prodigy. So when he went back to Japan there a few months ago, I got sad. I said, oh, who knows when he'll be back. Now that we know he's back, he's officially signed, I think that's great. I think that's a great pickup for AEW. And honestly, in this promo, his English is pretty good. His English is getting better. Now he's going to be living here, and I think that's a big signing for AEW. We had Ricky Starks against Brian Cage, semifinal match in the AEW World Title Eliminator Tournament, with the winner meeting All Ego Ethan Page on Dynamite this Wednesday in the finals. Originally, the finals were going to be on this show, but because Ricky wasn't cleared, things got pushed back, so that match is going to be happening on Wednesday instead. Ethan Page was out there. He sat in on commentary for the match. And, you know, anytime, let me just put this up here, because this right here, this tweet that you see from over a year ago on your screen, this will always be the first thing I think of when I think of Ricky Starks against Brian Cage. This is why Ricky Starks will always own Brian Cage. This never fails to get a laugh out of me. They were going to have a Philadelphia street fight on TV, and they were tweeting each other in Cage tweets, and where's the Philly street fight at, Starkman Jones? And he goes, it's in Philly, you big dumb bitch. This right here is the first thing I will always think of. That's why Ricky Starks will always own Brian Cage. This was good. I thought this was good. It was mostly Starks taking a beating. He was selling the ribs. It is ribs all taped up, I think. So he had to go through two monsters in 2 days. He had to go through Lance Archer last night on Rampage, and tonight he had to go through Brian Cage. Cage tried Weapon X. Starks got a roll up for two. Starks came back with a spear, got a near fall out of that. This all built to Brian Cage looking for an F5. Starks countered into a destroyer, and then he got the big man up for the Rochambeau, which is no easy feat. You know, Brian Cage has a lot. He has a lot more mass than Ricky Starks does. So Ricky got him up, but he didn't have him completely, and I think he was falling, and so he just quickly hit the Rochambeau and got the pin. So we are getting the final that I predicted. We are getting the final that I hoped for when this tournament first was announced, and we knew the brackets, which is going to be Ricky Starks against Ethan Page. Again, two young stars in this company. Ethan Page is very good. Ethan Page is somebody who Tony Khan should start doing more with. Ricky Starks has been somebody I've been saying Tony Khan needs to do more with him. He was out. He was hurt for a little bit. Now he's back. So they're going to meet on Thanksgiving Eve on Dynamite. And I'll tell you something else. I'm happy that this match got bumped. And I think it actually works out a lot better this way. Because think about it. This match being on this pay-per-view tonight, as stacked as it was and as late as it went, would have been lost in all the noise. It's better that this match is on TV now on Wednesday. This is one of the big feature attractions on the show coming up this week. It's a much better spot for it to be in. Final match on the pre-show was Eddie Kingston stepping into the ring. This was his dream match. This is the match that Eddie Kingston has wanted his entire career. Steps into the ring with his idol, the legendary Jun Akiyama, who spent many years working in All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling Noah. Now he works for DDT Pro. He just celebrated 30 years in the wrestling business. They did work briefly on Rampage last night in a tag team match. It was Akiyama and Takeshita against Eddie Kingston and Ortiz. Akiyama. That's a different person. Akiyama and Takeshita won in the tag team match last night. But we didn't get too much. We had a little bit of interaction between Kingston and Akiyama, but not too much. Tonight we got the singles match. They work strong style. So again, lots of chops, lots of suplexes. Both of them delivered exploders to each other before Akiyama hit a charging knee for the double down. Kingston avoided another exploder. He hit a DDT. Spinning back fist connected. Akiyama crumbled. He blocked a second one, though, into an exploder. And Kingston fought back with a Northern Lights bomb, hit another spinning back fist to put away Akiyama. He gets the 1-2-3. Immediately, you could see Eddie Kingston in the ring. He's getting all emotional. Right, his tears got his eyes are all red. Right, he's tearing up. He's looking up at the heavens. He kneels down. He bows to Akiyama. Akiyama pays him respect back. They shook hands. They hugged while they were on their knees. Once they got to their feet, Kingston raised Akiyama's arm. So basically, this followed. If you saw any of the Minoru Suzuki matches when he was in AEW, it followed the Minoru Suzuki blueprint. This was all about Eddie getting his dream match. Now, the match itself was fine. I didn't think this was really anything special, but for Eddie Kingston, it was special. For Eddie Kingston, I mean, this was bigger than any world championship. So for him, you could tell how much this meant to him. Kingston got the mic. He asked, how much time do we have before the pay-per-view starts? And he thanked Akiyama. He said, rest in peace to a number of Japanese legends, including Giant Baba. Says, I hope I made you proud tonight. He also used his time to promote the pay-per-view. He said, it's 7:53 and 40 seconds. Order the goddamn pay-per-view. I can't think of a better way to promote a show than that. I think all these companies, they need to enlist Eddie Kingston to hype up their events. If they need a hype man for the Super Bowl, Eddie Kingston's the guy. There's no more direct way to promote the show than that. You guys got 7 minutes left to order. Order the goddamn show. So he mentioned Jon Moxley kicking MJF's ass later tonight. And that got a lot of boos from the New Jersey crowd. And as we would find out in the main event, this was not a very pro-Jon Moxley audience in Newark tonight. So that brought us to the main card. Pay-per-view opened with the steel cage match with Jungle Boy, now going by not only Jungle Boy, but his real name as well, Jungle Boy Jack Perry. He did an interview this week, and he was asked about that. And he said, you know, it just felt like it was time. When Christian brought up his family and his father being dead and all that kind of stuff, he said that was kind of the opening. He said, at some point, I was going to start using my name. Once Christian started mentioning the family stuff on TV, it only made sense. So now he is going by Jungle Boy Jack Perry, which I'm sure makes Jim Ross very excited. Jim Ross did come out at this point. He was not on the Zero Hour, but he came out for the start of the pay-per-view. He joined Excalibur and Taz on commentary. Tony Schiavone disappeared. He was on the pre-show on commentary. He disappeared to do some backstage interviews, but he would come back a little bit later on in the show. So you know it's going to be a bloody night when we have somebody in the opening match on this main card wearing the crimson mask, as Jungle Boy was here in this match. This is only the opening match on the main card. And within minutes, Jungle Boy's head was split open on the cage. The blood was trickling down his face. Midway through the match, he couldn't even see. There was so much blood in his eyes, he could barely see. They showed his mother and his sister in the front row. They didn't seem all too bothered by any of this. Luchasaurus backed the referee, Bryce Remsburg, into the corner, right? So he has him distracted. Now the camera cuts outside and we see Christian Cage with his arm in a sling, sneaking up behind referee Mike Posey. Mike Posey was the referee outside the cage. He was looking on the inside. Didn't see Christian. So here comes this one-armed man who very covertly is sneaking up behind Mike Posey because Mike Posey has the key to the cage door hanging from his belt or his belt loop. And with his one arm, Christian reaches down and grabs the key without Mike Posey even knowing. So Mike Posey got robbed by a one-armed man. And by the time he realized what had happened, Christian had already climbed up the steps on the other side. He had unlocked the padlock to the cage door. Mike Posey called for security to be brought down. They came down, and they carried Christian off to the back. So now the door is unlocked. And Luchasaurus goes outside. He beats up a bunch of the security, or at least one of them. He beat up one of the security guys. Clearly, this was not a cage match with the escape the cage rules here. Jungle Boy followed him outside, and the dinosaur catapulted him into the side of the cage and then pulled out a table from underneath the ring. He grabbed a table, two chairs, threw them inside the cage. Luchasaurus tried a choke slam through a chair. Jungle Boy countered into a step-up destroyer off the chair and then gave a kill switch to him onto the chair, which is Christian's move. Perry launched himself off the chair again. He was trying for some other move. This time, Luchasaurus caught him by the throat, choke slammed him through the chair. In the corner, Jungle Boy fought free, hit an avalanche sliced bread, and both men were down. And at this point in the match, both men did the Undertaker Brock Lesnar spot from SummerSlam in 2005. The dual zombie sit-ups. And you can see Jungle Boy, they zoomed in on his face. And he got all dramatic. He said, "You were my best friend. You were my best friend." So he gets up, and both guys start throwing strikes. Jungle Boy climbed to the top of the cage. After he got Luchasaurus laid out across the table in the ring, because there was a table in the ring, he put a sleeper hold on him, and he got him sleepy enough, he laid the big guy out on the table. Luchasaurus did another zombie sit-up on the table, but Jungle Boy came and he blasted him in the head with a steel chair. So he climbs the cage to the very top of the cage, and he looks up to the heavens, and he blows a kiss to his father, and he does a dive. And now these cages in AEW are very tall. You know, Cody did a moonsault off one in the cage match he had on Dynamite once with Wardlow. These are very high. And he did a Shawn Michaels-esque elbow drop from the top of the cage down through the table through Luchasaurus. I think the idea was that his body would also go through the table. And, you know, he got the elbow, and the table did break. He didn't get all of his weight on top of him, but he got enough of it to break the table. So, big spot there. He applied the snare trap submission to Luchasaurus. He struggled. He started spitting up some black shit, but he had nowhere to go, and Luchasaurus tapped out for the win for Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy left the cage. He went to go celebrate with his mother and his sister in the front row. these two guys went out there and they had what I would say probably was the greatest opener to a pay-per-view in AEW history. And I sat here on this stream, on this channel a year ago, reviewing last year's Full Gear. And if you remember the opening match to last year's Full Gear, it was MJF and Darby Allin. And I said then that was the best opening match I have seen on an AEW pay-per-view in all of the pay-per-views that they have done. And I think that this topped it. I think that this was the best opening match that we have seen on an AEW pay-per-view. This was a grudge match, lived up to the hype, made use of the cage, made brutal use of the cage. It was bloody. It was brutal. Jungle Boy fought back. They told a story in there, right? I mean, you had the big guy and the little guy. Little guy fought back. And it was the breakout match of Jungle Boy's career. The best match that I've ever seen him have as far as singles matches go. So yeah, tonight the boy became a man. I thought this was an excellent match. We got our first title match of the night for the Trios titles. This went on a lot earlier than I expected. The Trios Championships up for grabs. Death Triangle, Pac, Penta, Rey Fénix defending the titles against the former champs, the returning Kenny Omega, and the Young Bucks, the Elite. So the Elite made their return. The EVPs are back. I believe they are still EVPs, which is a questionable decision, but the EVPs are back. And they enter to Carry On Wayward Son by Kansas, which is a great song choice. Don Callis joined on commentary. As soon as Kenny Omega and Pac locked up to start the match, the crowd chanted, "Fuck CM Punk." Loud chants of "Fuck CM Punk." I wasn't sure what the CM Punk chants would be. I did say the other night that there will be, I'm sure, some CM Punk chants. I wasn't expecting the chant to be "fuck CM Punk," but apparently he did not have too many fans in Newark, New Jersey tonight. Not only did they chant "fuck CM Punk," there were also light chants of Colt Cabana as well. So the crowd made it very clear early on in this match whose side they were on. I don't know that the crowd will be as favorable to them on Wednesday when they are in Chicago. I gave up halfway through this match trying to track all the move. I mean, it was just pure insanity in this match. I just kind of sat back and tried to absorb it all and enjoy it. Nick Jackson did hit a twisting dive out onto Pac on the floor. Who I believe that had to be the spot. I think this was the spot. Pac looked like he got his nose broken. He came up. His nose was bloody for the rest of the match. I think he had his nose broken here. But Nick Jackson, he's sitting on the floor outside. Fan reaches down with what looks like a soda, but who knows, right? It could be coffee. It could be a soda. And Nick looks up and goes, "Is it diet?" I think the person said yes. And so Nick took the drink and he took a sip. I hope it wasn't a CM Punk fan. Nick did a little subtle reference to Punk during the match. He did Punk's move where he does the step up knee in the corner and the running bulldog out of the corner. Omega tagged in, he hit a Snapdragon on Penta and Pac, and then wiped them both out with the Terminator dive. Fénix and Nick Jackson had a back and forth that led to Matt Jackson hitting a springboard DDT on the apron. Rey Fénix took a hellacious bump on that DDT on the apron. Nick and Penta fought up top. There was a super Hurricane Rana by Nick Jackson that wiped everybody out on the floor. Again, like I said, total insanity here. The Elite went for a tombstone on Pac. Lucha Bros stopped it. Death Triangle hit a triple tombstone spot. A three-way tombstone spot, which I don't believe I've seen that before. Fénix got a splash off of his brother's shoulders out of the corner. Penta followed that with a diving destroyer. Pac finished off the sequence with a black arrow onto Kenny Omega, immediately transitioned into the Brutalizer. Kenny Omega was struggling. He was trying to get his feet on the bottom rope, but he wasn't close enough. And after struggling for a while, finally, the Bucks made the save. Pac tossed the ring bell hammer to Rey Fénix. And Rey Fénix is holding. Now, he's been trying to get him to use the hammer now for weeks because that's how Pac was retaining the All-Atlantic title for all that time. He was using the hammer. He was knocking people out, Trent Beretta and everybody else that he was in the ring with. So he's been trying to convince Rey Fénix, like, you know, basically come to the dark side, you know, use the hammer. And up to this point, Rey Fénix has said no. So again, he hands him the hammer and says, use it. And Fénix looked like he was contemplating it. He was kind of struggling with the decision. But again, he ended up refusing. He said, no, not going to use it. But then Kenny Omega laid him out with a V-trigger and hit a Tiger Driver 98, which looked brutal on the landing. I mean, really, that should have been the finish. But Fénix kicked out. Pac went for the hammer shot on Kenny Omega himself, but he ate a super kick instead. Nick Jackson wiped out Pac with the dive. Matt Jackson hit a moonsault off the top rope. Kenny Omega hit Fénix with a V-trigger. Pac then very discreetly, once again, hands the hammer to Rey Fénix as Kenny Omega is picking Fénix up on his shoulders for the One-Winged Angel. And Fénix is struggling. He's trying to avoid it. And then finally he realizes he has no choice. And the referee can't see it, but he's got the hammer. And he whacks Kenny Omega in the head with the hammer. And Omega goes down and Rey Fénix rolls him up, gets the pin, and wins the match for his team. I did not see that finish coming. And Fénix was having a little crisis of conscience when the match was over. He wasn't really happy with the decision that he made, but Pac came over and said, I'm proud of you. You see, I told you. And then Rey Fénix was like, yeah, you did. You did. So Death Triangle retain the Trios titles, and the Elite are losers in their first match back. I was shocked by that finish. I was shocked by the ending. But when you stop and think about it, it fits so perfectly into the story that they've been telling now for weeks with Pac and Rey Fénix. And Fénix, up to this point, resisting temptation. He doesn't want to give in. And finally, in a moment of desperation, he realizes either I do this or we lose. And so he uses the hammer and they eke out the win. So I actually really like the storytelling there with him succumbing to the pressure. I like the story there at the finish. And I'm actually glad. I'm glad they didn't just slap the belts right back on the Elite. Make them work for it. Build up to it. And it also keeps Death Triangle in the mix for a little while longer instead of them being relegated to the back burner, which is what's going to happen ultimately when they lose the belts to the Elite. Why rush into it? Drag this thing out a little bit more. Death Triangle is awesome. Pac is fucking great. Fénix, Penta, all three of them are fucking great. They deserve to be in a prime spot. Keeping them in that spot for a little while longer is something I have no issue with. So I thought they had an excellent match. That made back-to-back excellent matches here to open up this main card. They did have the announcement a little bit later on that they are going to have a best-of-seven series. Tonight was match number one. And we are going to have match number two involving these two teams on Dynamite this Wednesday. It sounds like overkill. I mean, we've had some good best-of-sevens over the years. We had, of course, the one most people will think of is Booker T and Chris Benoit in WCW. WWE tried to recreate it many years later. It wasn't the same. It feels like overkill, but after the match they had tonight, I don't mind it. You want to put these guys... And there's nobody is saying this is going to go the full seven matches. You know, it may go four, it may go five. But as great as this match was tonight, I can't sit here and complain about the fact that we're going to get to see it again. So we had back-to-back excellent matches. That streak came to a screeching halt with this next match. But, you know, they put these two in the death spot, so realistically, they had no chance. It was Jade Cargill, 41-0, coming into this match, defending her TBS championship against Nyla Rose. Nyla came out wearing Jade's TBS title that she stole many weeks ago. She came out wearing the title in a lowrider with Vicky Guerrero and Marina Shafir, channeling her inner Eddie Guerrero. My favorite part of this was Vicky was wearing Rhea Ripley's I'm Your Mommy t-shirt. It was clearly Rhea Ripley's t-shirt from WWE Shop, so I laughed when I saw that. Jade came out tonight. Now, Jade on these shows has in the past come out cosplaying as different characters, and tonight, this also got a pop out of me because I'm an 80s kid. Jade came out to the ring. She was cosplaying tonight as Chitara from Thundercats. You know, when I was a kid, there were two things that were more important to me than life itself. He-Man and Thundercats. I was a He-Man and a Thundercats kid, so when I saw that, it put a smile on my face. And not for nothing, she looked fucking great in that outfit. So Jay took the fight to Nyla, hit a pump kick that sent Nyla over the barricade into the crowd. Nyla regained control, hit a leaping splash for a near fall. Nyla blocked the pump kick, hit the knee drop that she does from the top rope while Jade was hanging over the top rope, caught her right on the side of the head. Jade avoided the beast bomb, but she was able to power Nyla up into a beast bomb of her own for a close two count. Nyla came back with the Jaded, which is Jade's finishing move, and got a very close near fall of her own. Nyla went up top, missed the senton. Jade came back with the pump kick and hit the Jaded to retain the TBS title and to improve her record, her undefeated record, to 42-0. I see everybody knows the Thunder. I'm so impressed. I'm so impressed by all of the people in the chat who actually know the Thundercats song. Thunder, 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 Thundercats. Remember Mummera? We saw Mummera have his final match in July against Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. Look, as far as this TBS title match goes, the build to this match and the whole story with Nyla stealing the belt, the whole story sucked. The story and the build to this match sucked. Tony Khan, I thought it was very funny on the media call this week. I don't remember what prompted the question, but he mentioned that Tony Schiavone was the one who came up with the idea for this storyline, you know, basically passing the blame to the other Tony. So we know who to blame for this storyline here. The story wasn't very good. The match really wasn't anything special. The match really wasn't very good either. But Nyla got more offense in here than anybody else has so far in any match that we've seen with Jade Cargill. They gave Nyla a lot here before, you know, Nyla took the loss. Jade was basically playing babyface, but you really had two heels against each other. Unless they're turning Jade, that also made it very awkward, because who do you cheer for here? Who do you cheer for? Jade walks around, you know, she walks around as the cocky, arrogant heel. Nyla Rose is a heel. Anybody with Vicky Guerrero out there screeching every week is going to be the heel. So you had a bad story. Heel versus heel. They didn't do these women any favors. But Jade is still the champion. We had the four-way for the Ring of Honor World Championship with Chris Jericho defending his title against Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, and Sammy Guevara. This was excellent. This was an excellent match. Chris Jericho, remember, in the build-up to this, said that he wanted Sammy Guevara in this match, and that if push came to shove, if the situation presented itself, he knew that Sammy would do the right thing. That was one of the key stories going into this match, that if the situation called for it, basically implying Sammy would lay down for him and take the loss. And early on in this match, the two of them were on the same page. They were working well together. Jericho and Sammy took turns lighting up Danielson with chops. Sammy hit or landed on his feet on a super rana that Danielson executed. And then he hit a standing Spanish fly. Jericho went for a lion salt. And when he hit the lion salt, he landed on top of both men, including Sammy. Whether it was intentional or not, he landed on both men. So Sammy went and he rolled out. Jericho didn't seem very bothered or upset by the fact that he landed on his guy. Claudio returned. He hit a charging double stomp on Jericho for two. Tried a springing uppercut, but Jericho caught Claudio with a code breaker coming down. Sammy broke up the pin attempt. Jericho couldn't believe it. Jericho had the match won, and Sammy broke up the pin. This is not what they agreed to. So Jericho got up in his face. Sammy got up in his face. Both men shoved each other. That led to a strike exchange with Sammy getting a two count off of a code breaker. Sammy tried the Walls of Jericho on Jericho. Jericho countered into one of his own. Danielson tried to break it up with a drop kick, but he got locked in the walls himself. Jericho had the hold applied. Here comes Claudio with a boot to the face, and Jericho just sort of, you know, muscles up, like he no-sells the boot to the face from Claudio. So he dropped Jericho with a suplex, locked in a sharpshooter. Danielson locked on the LaBelle lock while Jericho is locked in the sharpshooter. So you have both baby faces with dueling submissions locked in on the same guy. I don't know if Sammy was late. I mean, he was in both of these holds for so long, he should have tapped out. He was waiting for Sammy. Sammy eventually came over and broke it up. And instead of going after Danielson or Claudio, he opted to help Jericho up to his feet, and then he dropped him with the GTH. And instead of going for the pin, he hits the GTH, right? The knee connects to the chin. He leaves him to go climb up to the top rope. So Sammy heads up top, hits a shooting star press. It looks like he's got the match won. Jericho gets a shoulder up at the last second. Claudio presses Guevara over his head. He launches him onto Jericho, who at this point now is on the floor. So now they're both out of the way. But as soon as Claudio turns around, he walks right into the Busaiku knee. Here comes Bryan Danielson. Boom! Knee strike right to the face. And he hooks the leg, and he got the best near fall of the match because he had this crowd convinced that he had the match won. He had me convinced that he had this match won, but he did not. Guevara hit a springboard cutter on Claudio, then he jumped up in one leap. Danielson was perched on the top rope. In one fell swoop, Sammy jumped up onto the top rope. He grabbed Bryan, and he hit a top rope Spanish fly. Upon landing, Danielson totally no-sold it, immediately transitioned into the LaBelle lock. Jericho broke it up. Everybody ended up spilling out to the floor. Claudio hit a pair of running uppercuts to Jericho into one barricade, whipped him into the other barricade. Here comes another uppercut. Now Danielson's on the apron. Danielson jumps off. Claudio catches him, and he delivers a neutralizer to his fellow Blackpool Combat Club stablemate. Flattens him on the floor with a neutralizer. Sammy hits a shooting star press outside onto Claudio, quickly brings him back into the ring. Claudio, though, catches him with a pop-up uppercut for two. And then came the giant swing. Round and around goes Sammy Guevara. But now Chris Jericho has climbed back into the ring. And as Sammy is being swung around, as soon as Jericho sees an opening, he comes leaping in. He comes leaping in the middle of this giant swing, and he catches Claudio with the Judas effect. Now, he looked like somebody who was trying to pull into a traffic circle. He was waiting. He was just waiting for the right opening. And I think this was supposed to be the finish. The idea was he would come leaping in with the Judas effect. He would catch Claudio, flush right on the nose, and he would pin him. He caught him, but not totally. He kind of grazed him. So I think what happened is they improvised the second one. Claudio got back up. Jericho hit him, flush with the Judas effect, and then he pinned him. It didn't ruin the ending of the match or anything. I just think they were attempting to do it with just one Judas effect. He ended up hitting two of them. And so that was probably improvised, and Jericho gets the pin to retain the Ring of Honor World Championship. The second half of this match, in particular, I thought, more so than the first, but the second half of this match was great. But really, the entire match, when you look at the whole thing from start to finish, ended up being an excellent match. I expected Jericho to win. I know some people are going to be like, they're tired of Jericho having... They're just tired of Jericho. And I get that, but I never doubted that he would win this match because they're telling a story with him. Beating all the former Ring of Honor champions. I still think the story ends up with Daniel Garcia being the one to take the belt from him. Daniel Garcia hasn't even been seen. He's been on Dark. He hasn't been seen on TV in weeks. So I certainly hope that whatever they're going to do with him, they're not planning on doing it in the next few weeks or at Final Battle, because the guy hasn't even been on TV. Can't put that belt on him now. It doesn't mean anything. Nobody cares. You got to build him up. If he's the guy, if Tony Khan wants him to be the one to take that title from Chris Jericho, you got to build to that months down the road. And I do think that if Ring of Honor is going to get some kind of a weekly show early next year, which is what Tony Khan is hoping for, you don't want the Ring of Honor world title on Daniel Garcia or Wheeler Yuta. You want it on somebody like a Chris Jericho. You want it on somebody like a Bryan Danielson, who can then eventually drop it to somebody like that. So all that to say, If you don't like Jericho having the Ring of Honor World title, you better get used to it, because I don't see that changing anytime soon. And we found, and I don't know who he defends against the final battle. Final battle is coming up on December 10th. There are no challengers set up. They could do another match with him and Danielson. He beat Claudio tonight, so you don't really have to do that match. That pretty much is over and done with. Garcia, I think it would be too soon. I don't know who his opponent is going to be on December 10th, but I do know who his opponent is going to be on Thanksgiving Eve. Because later on in the show, we found out he's going to be defending against Tomohiro Ishii from New Japan Pro Wrestling. And so any opportunity to see Ishii is okay with me, because Ishii is fucking great. So that's going to happen on Dynamite this Wednesday. Speaking of final battle, I do want to mention one thing here. Hey, Dick the Cock Johnson just dropped a super chat. What is going on? What's going on, Dick? Kieran George, Rizzo with the 10 spot. You guys are awesome, man, with the super chats. You guys are fucking great. I'm going to be reading all of those, so get them on in. I mentioned Final Battle. I want to mention this because I know it was announced tonight. The main event of Ring of Honor Final Battle back in 2005. It's a pretty legendary match between Kenta and Low-Ki. And the two of them have not had a match, a singles match, since then. So now here we are 17 years later. Kenta is going to go one-on-one yet again with Low-Ki, not at Final Battle next month. Ring of Honor doesn't have the match. House of Glory has the match. House of Glory has a show coming up the week after Final Battle, December 17th, in Queens. House of Glory Revelations. It is going to be Kenta one-on-one with Low-Ki for the first time in 17 years. And I have the chance to call that match, so I just wanted to mention that. If you are able to make it to the show, you are not going to want to miss that match. You are not going to want to miss it. So, very excited. That is going to be, as they say, a banger. And I will be ringside for that match. I can't wait. So we had Saraya, who has not had a match in 5 years. Since she was forced into an early retirement, Saraya was back in the ring tonight against Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. They showed Saraya's brother, Zach, who flew in from the UK. He was here to cheer on his sister in the front row. The very first bump of the match that Saraya took, she was selling it as if she was injured. And the referee, Paul Turner, came over and he kind of stopped the match. And Britt Baker was standing off in the corner with a concerned look on her face. And I was like, what are they going for here? The match just started. And Saraya got up. She took her time getting up, but she got up. She looked up at Britt and she smiled and she shook it off and they just continued on. So I guess that was just her way of, trying to fake her out. The next, I'd say, three quarters of the match was Britt Baker working over Saraya. And I figured this is the way it was going to go. I figured they were going to play off of the fact, the neck, the 5 years out of the ring. And that's exactly what they did in this match. And it made for a very slow, very dull match. But that is what they were going for. She hit a bunch of neck breakers on her, including a draping neck breaker from the apron to the floor. I get that. You want to play off that. People, you know, are going to see that. They're going to wince. They're going to worry. Is she okay? You know, she hasn't taken bumps like this in 5 years. But the crowd was not into this in the way that you would expect them to be. Especially with somebody who has a name, people know who she is. They popped huge for her in New York when she walked out of Grand Slam back in September. You would think for her first match back, they would have been more up for this, but crowd really wasn't. But Britt was targeting the neck for most of the match. Both women were trading forearms until Saraya hit a series of short clotheslines. She hit the page turner, which Excalibur called the nightcap, for a near fall. Britt hit an air raid crash, and then she hit the curb stomp, but Saraya kicked out. Britt went for an avalanche air raid crash. Saraya countered into a sunset flip powerbomb that looked rough. And she got a near fall out of it. So after that, the Rampage, not the television show, but the move. I don't think they're calling it that anymore, but in WWE, the DDT, she called it the Rampage. So she hit the Rampage. That got Saraya a two count. She couldn't believe it. She could not believe it. Saraya tried a full Nelson. Baker spun out of it into a lockjaw. They traded a series of roll-ups. Baker was able to hit another curb stomp, but again, Saraya kicked out. And Saraya hit another charging knee strike, hit two more Rampages, and after the third one, she covered her, and she got the 1-2-3 to pick up the win. Her first win in 5 years, her first win ever in an AEW ring. And I will say this. I will say this about this match. For her first match in 5 years, I thought Saraya looked fine. She looked like she made it through in one piece. She didn't seem hurt. She didn't seem off or anything like that. I mean, you could say that, you know, she maybe was had a little ring rust or whatever, which is totally understandable because the woman has not wrestled a match in 5 years. She has not done any kind of heavy physicality of any kind in 5 years, right? So you can excuse that. I thought that she looked fine. I'm happy that she appears to have made it out okay. That was the most important thing. And you could tell how much it meant to her. From the moment she walked out, she was covering her face. You would think Sami Zayn snuck up behind her and was trying to crack her. Like he does to Jey Uso, right? And she was trying to hold it in. Obviously, it was going to mean something to her. She's been waiting for this for years. She never even knew if this opportunity would present itself. She had her family there at ringside. So for her, this was a big moment. I was happy for her that she was able to get that moment. So now that I got that out of the way, this was not a good match. This was not a good match. The crowd was very quiet for the majority of it. And I lay this. I don't lay this on either one of these women. I lay this at the feet of Tony Khan and the booking of this feud heading into this match. That is why I think we had a mostly quiet crowd here for this match tonight. You go back to Dynamite last week. And I praised Britt Baker's promo because I thought her delivery of the promo was very strong. I thought she made a strong case for why she would resent the fact that, you know, Saraya would say these things about her. You know, a lot of the things that she said made sense. And I just thought that it was a great promo. But it was a very weird promo because it was a total babyface promo. So you have in Britt Baker a woman who was the top heel in the AEW women's division. Britt Baker has been the top heel in the AEW women's division now for, a year and a half, 2 years? It's been a long time. She came out there on Dynamite last week and cut a total babyface promo. She babyfaced herself. And she made it sound like Saraya is invading from some other company. She's some sort of foreign invading force who doesn't belong here. I'm the homegrown AEW star. I'm the one who the fans know. I'm the one who the fans like. I put the work in. I busted my ass, and now you're coming in, and you're trying to take my spot. You don't belong here. You don't have AEW in your blood. That's basically the promo that she cut. It was like us against them. But Britt Baker is the heel. So it was very strange that they would build the matchup that way, and I just thought coming into this, it was a very odd choice to make. Now we see, having now watched the match and the crowd reaction, what the outcome of that was. The crowd really didn't know who to cheer for. Britt was getting cheers. But, you know, not everybody in the crowd was cheering for Britt Baker, but she got her fair share. So instead of this being a moment where Saraya could come in and say, man, I haven't wrestled in 5 years. I see everybody coming to AEW. I see everybody having fun. I see all the women in this division. I want to be part of that, but it's been 5 years. I had to get medically cleared. I had to go to all these different doctors. I had to undergo all these different tests. I never knew if I would be able to do what I love ever again. And then I got cleared. It was one of the happiest days of my life. And now, Britt Baker, the only way I can complete this comeback story is to go to Full Gear and get a win over you. And they should have had the crowd 100% cheering for this woman to beat Britt Baker. Britt Baker should have been out there on TV talking shit, laughing at her, mocking her. They took a very different approach. And instead, you came to Newark, New Jersey, and you had half the crowd chanting DMD. That's a failure of the booking. I don't blame either of these women. I don't blame Saraya for that or anything. But unfortunately, that's the effect that it had on this match. It was such a simple story to tell, And they tried to blur the lines, and it made for a terrible crowd reaction, unfortunately. The crowd just was not as invested in this match as they should have been. It made for a very flat return for Saraya. We had a triple threat match for a lot of titles in this company. Ring of Honor titles, AEW titles. So you had a lot of championship matches tonight. One of those championship matches was the TNT Championship. Wardlow defending against Powerhouse Hobbs and Samoa Joe. This was fun. This was a fun hoss fight. Three big guys going in there beating the hell out of each other. What's not to like? Wardlow at one point hit a big twisting dive off the top rope. He got so much height on this. He almost completely overshot both guys. He got so much height on this. You would think for a second there that you were watching a cruiserweight match. And a guy as big as Wardlow, he's got to be, I mean, they called him 280. I don't think he's 280. But he's probably every bit of 250-ish. Maybe 260. It's a big guy. And he can fly around with the best of them. We need to be seeing more of Wardlow. We haven't gotten enough focus on Wardlow. They lost the plot with Wardlow after he beat MJF at Double or Nothing. His booking from the beginning of June until now has been complete trash. Just absolute garbage. This guy he's not a Goldberg clone. He's a great athlete. He can talk. He can work. He's an AEW homegrown guy. He's another one of those guys Tony Khan needs to double down on and not have him just fading into the background the way that he has for the past few months. Hobbs and Wardlow spilled out to the floor. Samoa Joe wiped them both out with a dive. Joe tried for a powerbomb on Wardlow, but Hobbs, my God, this spot. So Samoa Joe is about to try for a powerbomb on Wardlow. Powerhouse Hobbs comes like a bat out of hell from out of nowhere, and he pounces Samoa Joe. Just, you know, we talk about Braun Strowman and the Strowman Express when he's, you know, running around the ring and shoulder blocking people. I don't know where Hobbs came from, but he was going 60 miles an hour, and he knocked Joe so hard into that barricade, I feared that he was concussed. Like, that's how hard the back of his head sounded like it hit the guardrail. So Joe was down. It was a sickening spot. Back inside, Hobbs flattened Wardlow with a spine buster. Wardlow and Hobbs were jockeying for position. Wardlow ended up hitting two power bombs. But as he went for a third one, Samoa Joe got back in the ring. He had the TNT championship, and he clobbered Wardlow in the back of the head with the TNT title. So that took Wardlow down. Joe locked on the Coquina clutch on Hobbs. He put him out. The referee called for the bell, and we have a brand new TNT champion. His name is Samoa Joe. He is now Joe Two Belts. TNT title on one shoulder, ROH TV title on the other. Again, that was the second most surprising finish to me on the show tonight. The first one was the Elite losing. The second one was this one here. I was not expecting Samoa Joe to walk out as the TNT champion. And I hate that Hobbs was only in there to take the losing fall. I hate that aspect of it, but I cannot hate on getting more Samoa Joe on AEW television. I know they have the ROH TV belt on him. I don't care about that. Samoa Joe needs to be on AEW television more often. And him having an AEW championship should guarantee us more Samoa Joe on TV. We need more Joe, not less. So that I cannot hate on that. This was, overall, though, I thought a very fun match. And it makes me wonder, you know, if they only did the title change. I was thinking, you know, they put the TNT title on him. We have that Ring of Honor pay-per-view coming up. And it makes me wonder if the only reason they did that was so that they can have Joe and Wardlow one-on-one at Final Battle and just put the belt back on Wardlow there. We should get a sense of that on TV this week if that's the direction they're going in. When the match was over, Hobbs and Wardlow were in the ring and they shared a stare, and Hobbs kind of nodded at him out of respect. So it was almost like, yeah, we both got fucked over by this guy. My other hope is that Hobbs stays in the hunt. I don't like the way that they just sort of threw him in there to be the sacrificial lamb. Hopefully we'll see him involved in some way, but I'm wondering if that was the goal here. Switch the title here just to get it back on Wardlow next month. Backstage, Tony Schiavone was with Chris Jericho and Jake Hager. And Jericho was asked about Sammy Guevara and his actions in their match earlier. And Jericho said, look, I like that Sammy did that. He goes, I respect Sammy, and he called Sammy a future world champion. And somewhere, Andrade El Idolo is twitching, throwing some furniture. But he said that Orange Cassidy showed up, and he said that he has a friend, former Ring of Honor champion, in fact, who wants a piece of Chris Jericho. He wants a shot at Jericho's Ring of Honor World Championship on Dynamite this Wednesday, and that man is the Stone Pitbull, Tomohiro Ishii. I had forgotten that Ishii was a TV champion in Ring of Honor. He was never the world champion, but they've opened it up now where any champion can challenge Jericho. That's how Colt Cabana got the match. Colt Cabana was a tag team champion with CM Punk many years ago, so he got the match with Chris Jericho. So now Ishii wants a shot at the Ring of Honor world title. And Jericho said that Ishii used to be his young boy and used to carry his bags and shine his shoes in Japan, and he accepted the challenge and walked off. And so we were left with Orange Cassidy and Jake Hager. Jake Hager and his stupid purple bucket hat. And Hager asked Cassidy, what's in the bag? Because he had his backpack with him. And he unzipped the bag and he pulled out the All-Atlantic Championship and he said, you like it? Because you want a shot at it? And Hager says, sure. So they made that match official for Dynamite this week. And then Cassidy complimented him on his stupid purple bucket hat, and that was the end of the segment. We had Sting and Darby Allin against Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. No disqualification, no countout. Tony Schiavone came out to replace Jim Ross on commentary for the rest of the show. It was JR's bedtime. Lethal was out first. Then Jarrett made his entrance. Jarrett called out four Sting imposters to escort him to the ring, who never really factored into the match at all after that. There was a body bag on stage. And so Jarrett and Lethal saw this, and they left the ring, and they went to go walk up the ramp towards the body bag, and then smoke came out from the stage to distract them. Darby Allin came from out of nowhere. He had his skateboard, and he attacked them with the skateboard. So he is attacking Lethal. Jarrett was actually back in the ring. And Jarrett is standing there, and Jarrett has no idea that Sting is behind him. I don't know who was in the body bag. I guess we never did find out who or what was in the body bag. But he has no idea. He's completely oblivious to the fact that Sting is standing in the ring behind him. And once he turned around and saw him, they rang the bell, and we got chants of TNA throughout the arena, throughout the Prudential Center in Newark. What did I say? This had TNA 2004 vibes, which is not necessarily a good thing, but TNA chants here in 2022. So all four men brawled into the crowd. Darby and Jarrett, they ended up fighting on the in the floor area right next to the ramp and the stage. Sting and Lethal were in the crowd at the far end of the arena somewhere. So Darby, he climbs up onto the stage. And he goes to the back, comes back out with a ladder. And he sets the ladder up on stage. And he's Darby, so you know he's going to do something fucking crazy. Climbs to the top of the ladder. And he does a coffin drop from the top of the ladder down onto the floor. Excalibur on commentary said that had to be 25 feet. I think that was probably legitimately what it was. 20 to 25 feet. He was way up there. Putting his body in the hands of Satnam Singh. Trusting that Satnam Singh is going to catch him. Which he did. He did catch him. But boy, that's a lot of trust to put into somebody who has not been doing this for very long. I don't know that I would have had the balls to do that. So he dives off, Satnam Singh catches him like a little baby, and he carries him up over onto the ramp, and then he just dumps him like a sack of garbage. Like he flings him and just dumps him on the ramp like a sack of garbage. Satnam Singh then went off into the crowd to go find Sting and Jay Lethal. Eventually, he found them. He ended up saving Jay Lethal from a fall, caught him. But then Sting did a balcony dive onto all of the men and wiped them all out. Sting, I got to tell you, Sting loves his balcony dives. This is like Sting doing his best Terry Funk and ECW impression. This is what he's doing here in AEW, only minus the barbed wire. That is what Sting is doing. He loves jumping off things. I remember when they were still doing the pandemic shows at Daly's Place. I think it was the first live match that he did after the cinematic match. And he dove off something there also. I think it was like a giant box or something that he dove off of. 63 years old, Sting loves jumping off of tall objects. He's tempting fate. One of these days, I'm just saying. So all four men ended up back in the ring. Sting made a hot tag. I have no idea why anybody bothered with a tag. It's no disqualification. They're standing on the apron waiting for the tag. Get in the fucking ring. Satnam Singh came in the ring later and he chokeslammed Sting. You know why? Because there's no disqualification. So I have no idea why they were even bothering making tags here. But as I said, Satnam Singh delivered a chokeslam and nearly broke Sting in half. Jarrett wanted a guitar shot. And he went to go swing the guitar, and he almost hit Jay Lethal by accident, but he stopped himself. And Jarrett got knocked down. He dropped the guitar. Darby Allin went for a coffin drop off the top, but he jumped backwards right into a guitar shot by Jarrett. He smashed the guitar across Darby's back on the way down. But then Darby kipped up, and he no-sold it. Satnam Singh came back in. He missed the splash. And Sting was setting up for a Scorpion Death Drop. And he couldn't get it. And Satnam Singh wouldn't go down. Hey, morning. Crazy Gacy in the chat says morning to Lord Solomonster. That's right. I am officially a Lord. Thanks to established titles. What's going on, Crazy? Tries a second time for the Scorpion Death Drop. The Giant won't go down. Sting says to Darby, go up. Darby climbs up to the top rope, and while Sting has him still in the position for the Scorpion Death Drop, Darby comes off the top with a coffin drop, and they finally take the big guy down. I thought that was a cool spot. Jarrett got wiped out by a Darby Allin suicide dive, and there is no suicide dive in wrestling quite like a Darby Allin suicide dive. So that took out Jeff Jarrett for the remainder of things. In the ring, Jay Lethal tried for a lethal injection, but... So here's what happened. The idea was he was going to come off the ropes for the lethal injection. And as he came backwards, Sting would catch him in position for the death drop and he would deliver a Scorpion Death Drop. Sting did give him a Scorpion Death Drop. It just wasn't the smoothest Scorpion Death Drop. And he kind of fell. You know, the momentum was carrying him backwards. He couldn't stop himself. So he just went backwards. And you can kind of tell, I think Sting was... you know, upset that the move did not go the way that he probably envisioned it going because it was part of the finish. You know, they didn't redo it. They just kind of continued on. Darby went up top. Darby hit a coffin drop on Jay Lethal and got the win. So as this, as I predicted when I did the predictions the other day, this was going to be the revenge that Darby Allin needed on Jeff Jarrett. Sting came back, they got their revenge, and that's all this was. It was the feel-good moment with the baby faces going over. This did not need to be on this show. They could have done this match on TV. As long as this show was, I look at the card and I say, were there matches that could have been cut from this show and done on television instead? The answer is yes. This is one of those matches. Because by this point, again, we were getting very late in the night here. So, I mean, look, I thought it was fun for what it was. It didn't really need to be on this show. But I have learned to appreciate Sting. I'm trying to appreciate Sting while we still have him in the ring. Because you never know when his last match is going to be. He may wake up one morning and say, you know what? I think I'm done. 63 years old. I'm just enjoying the ride while it lasts. I'm still amazed by the things, frankly, he's able to physically do when he's out there. I want to lend you guys a hand and tell you that today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp Therapy Online. There have been times in my life where I have had to take care of a loved one and they were going through a rough time. And, you know, it could be hard to know what to say and what to do sometimes in those situations. You wish there was a handbook or a manual that you could refer to for the right answers. Life doesn't come with a user manual. That's where therapy can help. BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient, secure, and accessible anywhere, 100% online. If you don't think therapy's for you, that's because you've probably never tried it. So keep an open mind about it. If you are dealing with self-esteem issues, maybe you've been depressed about something, maybe you're feeling overwhelmed, whatever it may be, don't be shy to open up and talk to somebody. That's what their therapists are there for. And again, it's all done online. You don't have to drive to somebody's office and find a parking spot and then sit in a waiting room and pretend you're reading a magazine when you're really just looking at the people who are sitting around wondering what's wrong with them and judging them. You don't have to worry about any of that. You don't even have to go on camera to see them if you don't want to. You set the ground rules with your therapist. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service. They've matched millions of people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists. You just fill out a short questionnaire to match with one. And if you try it and you don't think things are clicking, it's very easy to switch to a different therapist that you do feel comfortable with. Everyone deserves to feel their best. If you're feeling stuck, get unstuck with BetterHelp. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's better. HELP.com/Solomonster. Then we got good. Toni Storm defending the interim AEW Women's Championship against someone that she is very familiar with, a former best friend of hers, Jamie Hayter. Crowd was big time behind Jamie Hayter here. It was pretty clear from the start they wanted a title change in this match. They were not very fond of Toni Storm, but they were very fond of Jamie Hayter. Tony Khan knew this going in. Hence the finish. This was Toni Storm's best match since coming to AEW. It was Jamie Hayter's best match since debuting in AEW. Toni got her nose busted open, probably broken, like Pac did in the Trios match. I didn't see where it happened, but she came up all bloody from the nose. It was all over her face. Rebel, midway through the match, because Jamie wanted to come out here and do this on her own, so there was no Rebel and there was no Britt Baker when the match started. Midway through, Rebel sneaks down to the ring, unbeknownst to Jamie Hayter, and tries to interfere. She got caught. She got ejected by Paul Turner. Storm tried her hip attack for a third time after hitting it twice earlier. When she hits those hip attacks, holy shit, does she get some fucking momentum behind those? I mean, Jesus. So she tried for a third one. And this time Jamie moved and Toni went crashing to the floor. And she landed right where Rebel had dropped Storm's interim title, on the ground. So Toni is on all fours on the floor, face looking down at her championship. And then into camera view comes somebody dressed in a hoodie. We can't tell who it is, but this person gives her a curb stomp right on the belt. Then the person reveals herself to be Britt Baker, who got a pop, only because people knew that she was there to help Jamie Hayter win the belt. So Toni Storm is curb stomped here on the belt. In the ring, Jamie Hayter planted Storm with her own Storm Zero finish. He used her own finisher against her. Storm Zero, crowd bought into the near fall, so did I. But Toni kicked out. Champion came back with the Storm Zero. Hayter kicked out. Britt Baker distracted Toni Storm long enough to turn around into the Uranage into a backbreaker across the knee, which is a move that Jamie Hayter calls the hate breaker for a close near fall. Hey, shout out to Zeno Slayer, one of our Sound of Legends here on the channel. He just became a channel member. Hey, Zeno Slayer. Cheers to you, brother. Welcome to the channel. You know, we picked up like 8 or 9 new channel members in the last, I think, 48 hours. So you guys are fucking awesome. Hit that join button. So the fans were into these near falls. As late as we were into the show, and there were certain matches where the crowd would kind of dip in and out of it in terms of their excitement level, but they were buying into these near falls. Like, I take it back to All Out. As hot as that crowd was for the Acclaimed, right? They hung on to every near fall because they wanted those guys to win the belts in the worst way. And they were upset when they didn't. And then they did the rematch at Grand Slam, and finally they got the big payoff here. So, which is what I thought was the idea here, which is that Jamie Hayter would not win the championship, but then she would either win the TBS title at some point, or they could build to a title win later on. So they were hanging on to every near fall in this match. Britt climbed up on the apron. She removed one of the top turnbuckle pads in one of the corners. As she was standing there, Storm sent Hayter into the corner, and she slammed into Britt. She slammed into her friend, and she knocked Britt and the turnbuckle pad with her all the way down to the floor. Storm charged in, Jamie moved, and Tony went headfirst into the exposed buckle. And Jamie Hayter finally hit her ripcord lariat, one of the best ripcord lariats in the business. And she covered her, and she scored the pin to win the championship, and the crowd exploded for her. The crowd went nuts. They love that finish. And we have a brand new interim AEW Women's Champion. They love the finish, as did I. I was not expecting a title change here on this show, but Tony Khan read the room and he made the right call. And I thought this was an excellent, just based on Tony Storm's face, hard-hitting match between these two women. What does this mean now for the partnership between Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter? That's going to be the story going forward. Britt Baker was very much in support of her winning the match. She came out to help her. There was that little miscommunication at the end where they slammed into each other. So even though they were celebrating when the match was over and they were all smiles, is that going to factor into things on Dynamite this Wednesday? Is that going to be brought up? The fact that, you know, you slammed into me, you knocked me off the apron. I did help you. You can give me maybe a thank you, show me some appreciation here. Maybe Jamie Hayter brings up the fact that, look, I appreciate it, but I told you guys I didn't want your help. I could do it without you. Britt Baker can hold this over her head now and say, the only reason you won the championship is because of me. I deserve a shot at that title. Were it not for me, you wouldn't be the champion right now. And Jamie could come back and again say that I didn't ask for your help. That could be the springboard for an eventual match between Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter, which I have to imagine is going to be the direction now. So that's my question. How long before Britt Baker wants to cash in on that goodwill? How long before she starts showing signs of jealousy with her best friend? I don't know that it'll be a week before we start seeing signs of that on television this Wednesday. We still don't know when Thunder Rosa is going to be back. Tony Khan made a comment on the media call a few days ago that he wants to give Thunder Rosa every opportunity to come back and defend her championship, but it could end up being a situation where he may have to just take the interim title and declare the interim champion the full-time current AEW Women's Champion. I know Thunder Rosa has said she wants to be back by January. There's no guarantee of that. So Jamie Hayter right now is the interim champion. Jamie Hayter could very well end up becoming the full-time AEW Women's Champion, depending on what happens with Thunder Rose. We had the Acclaimed. No Billy Gunn. But we had Max Caster and Anthony Bowens against Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland for the AEW Tag Team Championship. This was in the second death spot on the show, right before the main event. So this did not get nearly the reaction their first two matches did, but it did pick up there at the end. There were two stories at play here in this match. One of them is a story that they started on Dynamite on Wednesday. It was Anthony Bowens one-on-one with Swerve Strickland, and Swerve dumped him into the crowd. Bowens came up favoring his shoulder, selling an injury. During the week, there were pictures of him out and about with his arm in a sling. People didn't know if the injury was legitimate or not. Now we know it was all part of the storyline. So they worked over the shoulder. He came out, he had tape all over the shoulder. That was story number one, working over Bowen's shoulder throughout the match. The other story was the split that came at the end with the challengers, which has been a long time coming, and it finally happened here on this show. There was some drunken idiot in the crowd who ended up getting ejected in the middle of this match. You could see the fans on screen. They were all looking at something off camera. Totally not paying attention to what was happening in the ring, and then they started chanting asshole at the guy, and I think they cheered when they finally took him out. So that didn't help things in this match. Swerve fought off a double team. He dropped Max Caster with a brainbuster. Keith Lee beeled Caster just clear across the ring. And Lee and Strickland hit their fall from glory finish. Caster, though, somehow kicked out at two. Caster got launched over the timekeeper's table outside. Swerve pulled out a pair of pliers, just like the ones that he used to maim poor Billy Gunn on Rampage all those weeks ago. So on cue, here comes Billy Gunn. And my God, this crowd came alive. You would think that Stone Cold Steve Austin had emerged. The glass had shattered. Here comes Daddy Ass, getting Daddy Ass chants here from the building here in New Jersey. And he comes down. He eats a boot to the face by Swerve, who kind of kicks him off. The referees are holding Billy Gunn back. They end up ejecting him, so he didn't do much of anything. But he came out and got that big pop, and they took Billy Gunn to the back. So now that all the referees are distracted by what's going on with Billy Gunn, Swerve sees an opportunity. He gets into the ring, and he goes over to Keith Lee and says, "Here you go." And he hands him the pliers, and he wants him to use the pliers on the Acclaimed. He wants him to use the pliers on, I think it was Bowens who was in the ring. Now, they've been doing their whole Sting-Lex Luger act now for a while on TV. If you think back to when Sting and Luger were partners in WCW back in like 95, 96. I think it was 96. Luger was more of the heel, all full of himself. Sting was the babyface. That's sort of been the dynamic here, although Swerve has been clearly defined as a heel. There's been no ambiguity about what he is on TV. But they've been doing this for a while. Keith Lee looks at the pliers, and he throws them away. He goes, "I'm not going to use these." And then Swerve slaps him, slaps his partner right across the face, which was a very big mistake. And the crowd knew it, and the crowd started a "you fucked up" chant as soon as he did that. So Keith Lee then helped Anthony Bowens up to his feet and patted him on the back, and then he walked out. He deserted his partner. Swerve couldn't believe it. Bowens got a schoolboy on Swerve for a two count. Bowens reversed a JML driver into a blind tag to Max Caster. The Acclaimed hit a combination sit-out driver, and they pinned Swerve to retain their titles. This turned into a hell of a match here by the end. First half of this was very forgettable, you know, even without the drunken idiot in the crowd. But this picked up at the end. It was the story. At the end of the day here, it was the story that really carried this match and that whole thing with Keith Lee taking the pliers and throwing them away and not, you know, refusing to use them. This looks to be the final, you know, nail in the coffin here of the partnership with Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. Swerve is going to be just fine. Swerve Strickland has been a tremendous heel. So I have every expectation that he'll continue to be a great heel on his own. He doesn't need to be part of a tag team. The whole thing with the pliers, it made sense as far as their story, but to me it was a little too close to the whole, what we saw earlier in the show with Pac and the hammer, you know, and handing it to Rey Fénix. I guess the difference here is that Fénix ended up using the hammer, and here Keith Lee did not. I still think those stories were a little too similar to be on the same show, but again, I thought this ended up being a great match. And then that brought us to the main event for the AEW World Championship. 8.5 hours later, it was time for Jon Moxley to defend his title against MJF. MJF came out to a big reaction. He motorboated a busty blonde in the front row. He's out there living his best life. Excalibur had a great line. He said that it's the first time Long Island has ever been cheered in Newark, and he may be right about that. Moxley came out through the crowd with William Regal, and the fact that Regal did not sit in on commentary for this match should have been a sign that something was amiss, because typically he would. But he did not join on commentary. I think he just went to the back, and he would reemerge later on in the match. But he was not on commentary for this. So Moxley smacked MJF in the face right off the bat to kickstart the match. MJF sent Moxley to the floor. He teased doing a babyface dive, but then he just kept running the ropes back and forth, and then finally he stopped and he posed. No dives. Smart man. Moxley flipped the crowd off with the double bird because they were booing him, and that got some light "fuck you, Moxley" chants. He went outside the ring later on. He was posing with his AEW World title to even more boos. MJF spat water in his face. Moxley came back through him into the ring steps. Back inside, MJF made a comeback. He was totally working this match like a babyface. MJF worked this match more than any other match that I have ever seen him in. He worked this match total babyface, and I never bought into it for a second. There is just something about him working as a babyface and trying to muster that babyface fire. Maybe eventually in his career, I'll be able to buy into it, but it's just so unnatural because you just look at the guy and he's a prick. The guy is a prick. And anytime he even attempts to act like a babyface in situations like this, you know that it's all just a put on. It doesn't feel genuine. It just feels like he's fucking with us and you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But he was working this match like a babyface. He went outside, he pulled out the timekeeper's table. He kind of pulled it out to set it up closer to the ring over by the apron. And he left the table there. He got caught by a cutter from Jon Moxley when he climbed back into the ring. So they fought out onto the apron. And MJF hit a jumping tombstone. But immediately he started moaning in agony. He was clutching his left knee. They end up fighting back out onto the apron. And this time Moxley gave MJF a pile driver through the table that was set up outside the ring, which was a crazy spot. And so down through the table he goes. They were teasing a count out that MJF was going to get counted out, which a count out in AEW, I mean, that's like you have a better chance of finding Bigfoot in the forest. So he made it back into the ring just in the nick of time. But Jon Moxley hits a paradigm shift, goes for the pin, MJF kicks out. Moxley locks in the figure four leg lock. MJF is screaming in agony, trying to turn the hold over. Finally, he reverses it. Moxley reaches and gets to the ropes. Both men are clutching their knees. MJF hit the heat seeker in the ropes, hooked the leg. Moxley kicked out. He tried for a second heat seeker. Moxley, though, shoved him off and then chop blocked the knee. More punishment to the knee. Moxley went climbing. MJF grabbed the top rope and caused him to slip and crotch himself. Poor Renee. MJF climbed up on the middle rope on the inside. It looked like he was trying to get him on his shoulder for maybe a tombstone from the middle rope. We've seen him do that before. We've seen him use that. I think it was in a match with Sammy Guevara on Dynamite back during the pandemic era. So he was trying to do something here. Moxley slipped out. He got the anvil elbows, just raining down elbows on this guy. And he hits an avalanche paradigm shift. This is a very awkward, scary-looking DDT. But he hits the avalanche paradigm shift. Referee counted one. He counted two. MJF very gently reached up with his fingers and touched the bottom rope. Save himself. So Moxley now is getting up in his face. And he's yelling at MJF. And he says to him, give me your best fucking shot. And he says flat out to him, he goes, hit me, motherfucker. And so MJF spits on him. Moxley knocks him down. He picks him back up. They start trading strikes. Moxley hit the ropes. MJF pulled the referee Bryce Remsburg in the way. And Moxley bumps the referee. So down goes Bryce Remsburg. Now you know something's about to happen. MJF pulls out the Dynamite diamond ring from his tights. He's staring at it. And remember, before the match, he said, I am not going to use the Dynamite diamond ring. That's the one promise that he made. I'm not going to use the Dynamite diamond ring. Here comes William Regal from the back, right? The gentleman villain himself. Coming down to the ring, he looks up at MJF. He says to him, don't even think about it. Put it down. MJF throws down the ring. He flips off Regal. But behind MJF, Moxley snuck up. He applied a sleeper hold. MJF kicked off the ropes into a pinning position. Paul Turner got inside the ring. So we have a new referee now. He counted one, two. Moxley kicked out. So then Paul Turner gets bumped. Now we have two referees down. Moxley gets the bulldog choke applied and MJF taps. And that part I didn't like. If it were me, I would have left that out. I would not have had Moxley get the visual submission, but to me, it's a minor point, especially if MJF is going to be a heel anyway. I guess it doesn't matter, but I don't know that I would have had the visual tap out in there. But it didn't matter because there was no referee. So he's tapping, but there's no ref to call the match. So Regal tells Moxley, go get the referee. The referee is still down over there. Go get the ref. Moxley goes over to grab the ref. When Moxley goes over to grab Paul Turner and try to bring him back over, we see William Regal slip the brass knucks to MJF. What did I say weeks ago? I said the minute he said, I promise not to use the Dynamite Diamond Ring. When I was talking about how I don't trust Regal. Regal's probably going to turn. I said I could see the finish now. Not only is MJF going to win the championship, it's going to be William Regal slipping him the brass knucks. It's going to be MJF using the knucks to win the title. And sure enough, here's William Regal slipping the knucks to him. John Moxley has no idea. When John Moxley comes back over, he gets knocked out with the knucks. Down goes Mox. MJF crawls over slowly. He puts the middle finger up in the air. The crowd drapes the arm over Moxley. Here comes the referee to count the 1, 2, 3. Just like that, we have a new AEW World Champion. His name is Maxwell Jacob Friedman, 26 years old. Brand new AEW World Champion. Regal smirked. They cut to a shot of Regal on the ramp. He smirked at MJF from the ramp and gave a nod. And Tony Schiavone said that Regal just sold his soul to the devil. And to that I would say, how does one sell his soul to the devil? How does the devil sell his soul to himself? Right? There's no greater devil here than William Regal. And Moxley said it weeks ago when he was mocking MJF and he looked at Regal laughing. He goes, this guy thinks he's the devil. He goes, I've looked into the eyes of the devil. You did. He was looking into the eyes of the devil in the ring that night and didn't even know it. I said there was a reason why in that shot during that promo, they kept William Regal standing there in the background. It was too perfect. It was too perfect not to mean something. So it played out perfectly. Now, I don't know if the idea is to keep Regal and MJF together. They don't necessarily need to be an item. It'd just be a case where MJF finally earned Regal's respect. He took his advice. He earned his respect. Maybe Regal is going to end up retreating into more of a backstage role like what happened with Arn Anderson when Cody left. We don't really see Arn on TV anymore. Maybe Regal is going to be doing stuff behind the scenes and not on TV. Because now the Blackpool Combat Club, the whole thing now is pretty much up in the air. We don't know what the future is for the Blackpool Combat Club. The Blackpool Combat Club may just cease to exist now. It was a good run, but you knew it was going to end at some point. So we have to wait and see. Is William Regal going to be coming out with MJF on television when he comes out for his match? Is he going to manage MJF? Does MJF even need a manager? The answer is no. But I think if they wanted to do something with him and Regal, I mean, it certainly could work. But it's not as if MJF needs a manager. It's not as if MJF needs somebody to help do the talking for him. So that's going to be the biggest question here coming out of this match is what is the future of the Blackpool Combat Club? The finish also proves that MJF is anything but a babyface. I have every expectation that Ricky Starks is going to go to Dynamite on Wednesday. He's going to beat Ethan Page. And Ricky Starks is going to challenge MJF for the championship at Winter is Coming. And if that's the case, then the match is going to be Ricky Starks as the babyface against MJF very much as the heel, which is what he should still be. He might be a big money babyface at some point. I think he will. But right now, MJF is a heel. He's the biggest heel in wrestling. That is the role for him. And now this company is on his shoulders. He is now front and center. He is the champion. He is the man. He's the guy. He's the face of this company now. He's got the belt. He's going to be on TV every week. Let's see what he can do now, carrying a company all by himself. 26 years old. He's never been in this position before. It would have been CM Punk in that ring tonight in New Jersey, laying on his back doing the job for MJF. I don't know what that finish would have looked like. The only reason we got the Regal story is because the whole Punk story went out the window. Who knows what that finish would have looked like tonight, other than the outcome, I think, would have been exactly the same. which is MJF with his arm raised as the new AEW World Champion. That was always going to be the destination. And it was the right choice to make. Hangman Page, you could say Hangman Page was, you know, an AEW original, but Hangman Page, he had success in New Japan. He had success in Ring of Honor before he came here. So for all intents and purposes, MJF is the first true young pillar champion here to represent this company. It wasn't Hangman, it wasn't Jericho, it wasn't Kenny Omega, it wasn't Jon Moxley. This is new territory here. It's the dawning of a new era. It is the MJF era. And it is exactly the kind of fresh start that this company needs. Hit the reset button now. Coming out of this pay-per-view, the build to this show was very lackluster. This was not a good build for this pay-per-view that really inspired a lot of excitement. On paper, though, there were a lot of great matches. And now that the show is over, I can sit here and tell you this is one of the best pay-per-views that Tony Khan and AEW have ever produced. Now, we look ahead. We look ahead to 2023. We look ahead to Revolution. Where the future is going to take them, what the future looks like in terms of what they do with Ring of Honor, and you know, they're going to be hopefully expanding into new markets and not going to the same places over and over again. 2023 is going to be a very important year for them. The television rights negotiations are going to be coming up next year. MJF, I think, is the right person to be in the top spot in this company. Now we're going to see whether or not he can lead this company to the promised land. But I thought this was a great show, one of their very best. Now, Dynamite on Wednesday coming up has the second match in the best of seven series between Death Triangle and the Elite. We know that we are going to have match three is going to be on November 30th. Match four will be at the Winter is Coming episode on December 14th. And then if need be, they'll have more matches. Ricky Starks takes on Ethan Page in the finals of the Eliminator. Chris Jericho defends the ROH title against Ishii. And Orange Cassidy will defend his All-Atlantic Championship against Buckethead from the Jericho Appreciation Society. Miguel says that AEW already sold out Portland. I'm assuming that's their first time in Portland. That's what you would hope for. First time in new markets, they should do well. They should sell out. That when you keep coming back to those same markets, it's the law of diminishing returns where the numbers go lower and lower and lower. I mean, look at all the times they've been to Chicago. They're going to be back in Chicago again on Wednesday. Chicago, New York. 2023 needs to be a year where they kind of expand the map. Further west, international, they're going to be in the UK for the first time. That's going to be a big deal for them. They just hit Canada for the first time. You know, I don't know what the AEW audience is like in Australia. Maybe they can get down there at some point. They've got to expand the map and get out of their comfort zone a little bit more. That's one of the many things that they need to do, I think, in 2023. Let's take a look at this Twitter poll and see what people are saying about this show. Roughly 80% thumbs up for this show. 79.7% thumbs up, 12.6% thumbs in the middle. And we have got 7.7% thumbs down. So that is an overwhelmingly positive score here for Full Gear. Again, at Solomonster on Twitter, let me know what you thought of the show. But that is a pretty high mark for what I thought was an excellent pay-per-view. And with all of that being said, before I get into your super chats and all of that good stuff, I know some of you are here for this. We are doing a giveaway tonight. That championship that you see on your screen, that is the AEW World Heavyweight Championship that is now owned by Mr. Maxwell Jacob Friedman. This thing is a beast. I can tell you that. 9 pounds, 868 simulated joules. And we had over 2,000 entries in this contest. And so what we are doing tonight is we are randomly going to pick one winner to win the AEW Championship. I am bringing up the website right now that we use for these contests. And pasting in the names. And so what we are going to, I'm going to put this on screen so you guys can see. See if this works here. There you go. This is the list of names. I will browse through them here very quickly. over 2,000, I think it's about 2,400, if I'm not mistaken. Shout out to the fine folks at Wrestle Rumble for allowing me to be the master of ceremonies here for this contest. I'm going to hit that randomize button that you see right there. We're going to get a drum roll going. And whoever is in the number one spot, it's going to be a ranked list by number. There's going to be one name at the very top of that list in the number one spot. That is going to be the winner of the contest. And that is the person who is going to win the AEW championship. So, without any further ado, this is always my favorite part. Drum roll, please. Winner of the AEW championship is Isaac Melchor. Isaac Melchor, you are the winner of the... Holy shit, we had almost 3,000 entries. Oh boy, I understated the number of entries in the contest. We had almost 3K. That's pretty damn good. Congrats to Wrestle Rumble and congrats to Isaac. I don't know if it's Melchor or Melchor. Could be Melchor. Isaac, if I'm mispronouncing it, I'm sorry. But I don't think Isaac is too worried about me pronouncing his name. Isaac just won a friggin' 9-pound beast of a championship. So, Isaac, congratulations. And on behalf of Wrestle Rumble, I thank everybody who took part in the contest. Always fun to do these things. And again, I thank Wrestle Rumble for allowing me the opportunity to do this. We'll, I'm sure, be doing more of these in the new year. So, Isaac, you will be contacted by Wrestle Rumble very soon. Good sir. Enjoy your title. I got two of them on my wall behind me over my shoulder here. They look tiny over my shoulder, but I assure you, especially this one right here, the Big Eagle, these things are gigantic. Nothing like a good replica championship belt. But listen, Before I get to your super chats, I do want to let you guys know that if you like playing games online, either on your PC, on your tablet, or on your phone, I want you to check something out. I want you to check out the Lightning Link Lounge, because you might even be able to win some money if you check this out. Play slots like Lightning Link, Dragon Link, and Buffalo. You play Keno, shooting games, you can play poker games, like Texas Hold'em, Blackjack, and Roulette. Thousands of games to choose from. They pay winners daily. In fact, their record win so far is 30 grand. I've had some fun playing Dragon Coin and Candy Heroes myself. So for more information, you can search for Lightning Link Lounge on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok. You have to be 18 years or older to play. Ages may vary outside the U.S., an ID is required, or you can text 727-910-8809. And with all that being said, let's go ahead and switch over to your Super Chats, which is always a fun part of these streams. Always enjoy going through your questions here. So I want to thank everybody who has sent in a Super Chat. And however long it may take, it's 2 o'clock in the morning here on the East Coast, but I'm going to get through all of your super chats. I do make that vow. I do make that vow to all of you. Hey, Based Proletariat's in the chat. I love that name. Based Proletariat is with us tonight. Mr. Dynamite, no, I would not buy any belt that spins. The answer is no. Food Hive, let's start with Food Hive with the $9.99 super chat. My first AEW pay-per-view and stream, and I have to miss due to caterings, but I am calling it now. Full Gear will be excellent, and to my guys in the stream, I miss you all. You all make the week worth it. I guess you too. Oh, I guess me too, huh? These people wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me. You wouldn't have people to talk to if it wasn't for me, Mr. Food Hive. Del Fuego, what's going on? Is it 7 a.m. in the UK? It is 7 a.m. in the UK. Wow. Early shout out to my UK folks. They must be waking up and having breakfast with Solomonster. What are you guys having for breakfast? Dick the Cock Johnson, any choice to beat MJF besides Eddie Kingston is the wrong choice. Anti-M Bishop 07 with the 1992 Ric Flair Royal Rumble Super Chat. A Solid Monster, great pay-per-view per Instagram. December 17th, House of Glory Revelations, Kenta Low-Key 2. OMFNG. All the best. Smash that like and subs. Thank you, guys. I love everybody always looking out for the channel, reminding people to like the video, subscribe. A lot of advocates here on the channel. You're like my Paul Heymans. Only you look a lot nicer than he does. Groovy Goose, what would your moving graphic look like? Oh, my moving graphic, like they have the moving graphics in the pay-per-view preview. I don't know. What would my moving graphic look like? I wouldn't know how to move. I would probably look very awkward, like I do now. I don't know. I don't know what my graphic would look like. Shinakuma, you told us to come back, so here I am. Rizzo, $5 super chat. Great pay-per-view. What an ovation for the Elite, but shocked they did not win the belts. It did make sense later on. Also, LOL at the FCM Punk Chain. Jimmy White, great show, and seeing it in a movie theater was a great experience. Highly recommended. I've never seen a wrestling show in a movie theater or a closed circuit, you know, back in the day, anything like that. I don't know what that experience would be like. I guess it depends on the crowd that you're watching it with. But I guess that would probably be cool. Maybe could you watch it in IMAX? How do you think those WWE CGI graphics would look like in IMAX? Queen Fire Panda, knowing Mox needs a break and knowing Mox can't catch a break this year, MJF is going to get injured and Tony Khan will ask Moxley to come back. I don't think Moxley is going to say yes this time. He's probably already out the door and on his way back home. Black Wolf, the Dragon Master, just left the Prudential Center and really enjoyed Full Gear, but was not happy with the finish of the Moxley-MJF match. Moxley deserved better. Moxley deserved better. Moxley got the visual submission. He got the visual tap out. I thought they paid him more respect, frankly, than they needed to with that finish. I wouldn't have even done that. Moxley knew his role. Moxley knew exactly how this was going to go down. He had to know that the reaction was at least going to be 50-50. Moxley's not a dumb guy. He's a wrestling guy. He knows. He probably ate that shit up. He probably enjoyed every second of it. It went exactly the way they wanted it to. I don't think you need to feel bad for Moxley. I think Moxley is just fine. Nick Grosso with the 1999 Super Chat. Hey, Nick. Salute. My spiffy mug. Go to thesolomonster.com. Very bottom of the link tree, you'll see a link to the mug. Nick Grosso says, very good show. The only match I did not like was Jade Cargill and Nyla Rose. Death Triangle retaining was the right call, and I am so happy for Jamie Hayter, and I think they go the Orton Triple H route with Jamie and Britt. Oh, so they build Jamie for their biggest show of the year, but then Rebel gets over instead, and Rebel gets the match instead with Britt Baker. Is that what you're implying? Josiah Ball with the $10 Super Chat. What's up, Solid Monster? MJF is my favorite wrestler. He deserves his championship, and you were right. Regal turned. Always love William Regal as a villain, though. William Regal will always be a villain. Bugger me Bill. So, Jamie Hayter... I have no idea what that means. Emiliana with the 1999. Super Chat. Best pay-per-view of the year for me, just because I enjoyed so many of the narratives tonight. Main event ended just like it needed to. Cannot wait to see how everything goes. Let's go, Jamie, and let's go, Max. Thank you, Mox.
Dead man walking.
Oh, there he is. There's Kevin Dunn on my screen. Chris O'Neill with the $5 super chat says, rest in peace, Jason David Frank. Is that the actor? You got to remind me of who some of these people are. Carl the Crab, watched the pay-per-view in a cinema tonight. Great experience. Hater got the biggest pop of the night in the theater. Tony Khan has a true star in his hands. Yeah, and that was sort of the story of the night, right? Main event, MJF, Jamie Hayter, Women's Championship. Two people who I think are going to be people that he can build around going forward. You know, young, homegrown talents on the roster who I think could be champions and can be featured in a prominent role now for many years in this company. You know, you can even at some point build that whole women's division around somebody like Jamie Hayter. You could build the whole company around MJF. Tonight, I think it felt almost like the passing of a torch in a way. That's kind of how it felt. You know, with Mox losing the championship to Max, with Toni Storm dropping her title to Jamie Hayter, it had that feel, right? It had that feel like the baton being passed in a way. Corey Blake. Where the hell is Miro? I feel like I get this question at least twice a week. Congratulations to MJF on winning the championship. How long do you think he should hold the belt? I think he should hold it for a while. I don't have an exact length of time. I'm not saying he should get the Roman Reigns, you know, three-year treatment, but, you know, people are already sending me questions. Who should he drop it to? The guy just won the fucking belt. I'm not thinking about who he's going to drop it to because he's not dropping it anytime soon. By the time he drops it, the roster may look completely different. Dick the Cock Johnson with the $9.99. Toni Storm was booked like Super Cena in that match in a good way. Slim Yoshi, Full Gear was a banger show. Happy for Hayter and MJF, and Survivor Series is next week. Some good wrestling this month. That's right. That's right. We are less than a week away now from War Games. Marquise may be Marquise if he's been having some drinks tonight. Says amazing pay-per-view. Thanks for hanging in there. I'm telling you, these AEW shows, they're always rough. You know, we're not even done yet. It's already 2 o'clock in the morning. I have a pay-per-view because again, AEW now they have their shows like WWE does mostly, but with a few exceptions. On Saturday nights. So, you know, we're up into the wee hours talking about this. And then I have a podcast to do in about 7 or 8 hours. And we're going to be talking about this all over again. So it's always tough, but it helps when they at least give you a very good show. AEW is usually very good about the quality of their pay-per-views. They're just too fucking long. Rodimus Prime with the 10 spot. Good show all the way around. The devil finally got his due. The MJF era has begun. Ted Evans with the $22 super chat. Hey, Ted. Thank you. Great show. Nice reset after Brawl Out. Question. Top three favorite wrestlers after Brett. No particular order. You got to have Randy Savage on that list. So Brett and Mach are always basically at the top of my list. Kurt Angle would be on my list. I fucking love Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle could do it all. Kurt Angle was so funny and so entertaining when he was doing the goofball stuff. But then in the ring, when the bell rang, man, he was a machine. The matches that he had with everybody. I mean, he gave Undertaker one of his best matches, and the matches with Shawn Michaels, and the matches with Benoit, and the matches with Austin. You go up and down the list, you could probably find a whole bunch of other people, too. I mean, Kurt Angle was a once-in-a-generation talent. Isaiah Duzan with the $5 Super Chat. Jamie Hayter winning made my night. Thanks for all your hard work and giving me something to listen to at my horrible job. Well, I'm sorry to hear that you have a horrible job. I would leave that horrible job and find a non-horrible job. But I know it's not always that easy. Kieran George, thank you for the buck. Rizzo with the 10. Unbelievable what a turn the CM Punk chants have done. That line from The Dark Knight is true. You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. That was the case tonight with CM Punk. Dick the Cock Johnson feels like it might be Sammy against Jericho at Final Battle. Eh. As a main event, yeah, I don't think that's a... I don't know. Two heels from Jericho's group. Jericho against Sammy, unless... Were they going to turn Sammy? They had Sammy as a babyface. The only reason they turned him heel was because the people didn't like him and they wanted to boo him. You're not going to turn him into a babyface. I don't like that. Kalios with the 10th spot. Happy that MJ... Or MFJ, he says. Happy that MJF and Jamie Hayter won. To see two homegrown talents lead the new era from here on forward, made their careers in AEW and now leading it. EJ Slemp, the $4.99. Remember I told you some fans got into a fight during the Forbidden Door main event. Between that, tonight, and All Out, AEW feels like a 70s territory. So then I guess we just have to wait for the death threats and all that. So if you watch Tales from the Territories every week, that's all you hear about. Fan riots, death threats, guns being pulled. Loose Cannon with the $4.99. Enjoyed the show. The Hater Storm ending reminds me of Diesel winning the Intercontinental title from Razor with the same turnbuckle spot at the end of Superstars. Or at the end of their match on Superstars in 1994. That's right. That is how Diesel won the title. Although that was Razor going back first and not head first into the turnbuckle. Joe McCann with the 10 spot. Thank you, Joe, for the $10 super chat. Rizzo says, Meltzer's comments about Adam Cole made me nervous. I hope Cole at least has a long, healthy life with or without wrestling. Yes, apparently there are people within AEW who are very concerned about Adam Cole. It's hard to, you know, figure out exactly what that means without having proper context, which sometimes happens when Meltzer puts these kind of items in the Observer. Or if he'll throw a comment out on his radio show. Without context, you hear something like that, you think the guy is, you know, on death's door. It could just be that there are people in the company who realize that he hasn't been around in months and they're just concerned. And maybe he's actually doing okay and he'll be back soon. Like, we don't know. There's been no firm update on what's going on with Cole. As far as I know, he's still on Twitch, right? He's twitching and that's what you call it, right? He's twitching and... You know, it's not like he seems to be okay. It's just that I guess they just haven't cleared him yet. But yeah, obviously there's got to be concern because we haven't seen him in the ring since June. It's going to be December. So, you know, you make of that what you will. Hopefully everything works out okay. Ray Rock, missed Full Gear because my leg got kicked out of my leg. I hate when that happens. But have no fear, Ray Rock is here to see the great Solo for the recap. Hit that like button. Bob the Builder, which is worse, Bully Ray and Impact world title main event, or Tyrus being the NWA champion? Bully Ray, when he reinvented himself and he got himself in shape and dropped weight and created that character, actually did a hell of a job. He was a hell of a heel. I really didn't have an issue with the Bully Ray TNA title run at that time. So that's a very easy question to answer. I would happily take Bully Ray and Impact as the champion back then to fucking Tyrus as the NWA world champion who can barely move. But as Billy Corgan said, he's big. He's big. Brumakian Productions. What were your first thoughts when you heard Triple H's theme song, The Game, back in 2001? I remember not liking it. I thought it sucked. Obviously, I changed my mind the more I listened to it. Tuxedo T Servo, can't stay, but I wanted a like and support. Hope you finish before the sun rises. I'm trying. Groovy Goose, with all the ejections from ringside on the show, I thought the Mets were back in town. Yeah, you're a wise ass, aren't you? Joseph Brooks, who do you think, if not hurt, or if not being the right time, could have been WWE champion? Ahmed Johnson in 1996 or Ryback in 2012? As over as he was there for a period of time. And look, Ahmed was over too. So I think, and actually in a lot of ways, they're very similar. I think they're very similar in many ways. They were very over and very hot for a short period of time. But then there were issues either with injuries or injuring other people. And they fizzled out. And they just never ascended to that next level, I think, like the company and a lot of fans thought they would. They flamed out. So, and frankly, especially in terms of Ryback, I think we lucked out. But I don't know. I think it's a wash. I think they're very similar in a lot of ways. Queen Fire Panda, God of War Ragnarok is going to win Game of the Year. Fight me in the chat. Thirsting Howell the Third, formerly known as Tripod... Thirsting Howell the Third. I love it. I love the Gilligan's Island reference. I don't know how many people in the chat, depending on their age, will get that, but I got it, and I love that reference. How dare you not mention Transformers in the 80s cartoon lineup? Also, I had ordered this pay-per-view. Had I ordered this pay-per-view, it would have been the first one I ordered since WrestleMania 12. You know, I actually appreciate the fact that you are dropping donos and love here on the stream, and yet you have not spent money on a wrestling pay-per-view in 26 years. I actually think that's pretty cool. You would spend money on me as opposed to all of those other shows. Yeah, Transformers. I was never really a big Transformers guy, I gotta tell you. I really wasn't. It was more He-Man, Thundercats, the real Ghostbusters, Inspector Gadget. You know, those were my shows. There were a few other ones, but those are the main ones that stand out. Pink Panther. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, Sting is like a worker on his last day before retirement, just relaxing until his boss out of nowhere asks him to oversee a stupid and dangerous task. Yeah. Something like that. Temjin Zephyr. With the $9.99, great time at Full Gear Live, marked out when Hater won. Hey, there's Perk Angle, everybody. You were just talking about Perk Angle in the chat. I was just putting over Kurt. I should have mentioned Perk. How could I forget good old Perk Angle? Temjin, though, had a good time at Full Gear. Says, with that said, does that mean Statlander will be making a return to face Jade for the TBS Championship? Well, Statlander was my choice many months ago, and then she got hurt. And when I say she got hurt, she tore her ACL, which is an extended layoff. So she still has many more months to go. I just feel like, how much longer can we go with this Jade streak? Are you really going to go another 5-6 months with this? That's why I said, if not her, let's go with Jamie Hayter. I didn't expect Tony Khan to put the interim title on Jamie Hayter. So Jamie Hayter now does not need to beat Jade Cargill. If this is what she's going to be doing for a while, she does not need to beat Jade Cargill. And I come back to Chris Statlander, but it's just a matter of when is she going to be ready and how long do you want to just drag this stuff out with Jade? That title is being held hostage. You know, and it's not even as... You can't even say it's like a Roman Reigns thing, because it's not like she's going out there and she's putting on these great matches or whatever. It's all about building up Jade. Because the woman just... She looks and carries herself like a star. She is a star. But she's still very green. She's still learning. She's not going to go out there and give you those great matches that you're dying to see on TV. And AEW is a product that tends to put a lot of the focus on the in-ring. You know, they have stories as well, but... You know, the fans, you know, they have certain expectations, I think, for these things. So Are you really going to get another 6 months out of Jade Cargill as the TBS champion? I don't think they can go that long. That streak has to end at some point. She's not going to go, you know, 100 and something and oh, like Bill Goldberg did. Statlander would be my choice. I don't know how much longer we're going to have to wait for that. Athena just turned heel. I saw, that was great. I actually did go back, I watched that. I saw that on Rampage where she beat up Aubrey Edwards. The crowd, like, legitimately looked shocked when they saw that. It was like a shocking moment. You know, Jade tonight was booked like a babyface. So maybe if she's going babyface, Athena as the heel is the one who takes it. I just feel like, I don't know. I mean, you're building this streak up so much. I feel like you would want a strong babyface to be the one to go in there and take the title and break the streak when the time is right. But, you know, whatever. Look what WCW did with Goldberg. You know, he was the babyface and they had somebody end the streak. It's possible, I guess. You want to really put Athena over as a heel? You can do that. Boots, a fiver for the turkey fund. What if you sleep in tomorrow and we do a live sound off with the chat? Well, I've already put a lot of work into the outline and the notes and everything for the show tomorrow, and I watched all these shows, and I'm not going to throw all that away. Plus, I'm like Perk Angle. I'm like only without the perk. I'm a machine here. I don't miss shows. I've missed the occasional stream, like I did Raw last Monday, but like the main show, the flagship, I don't miss shows. I got my own little Iron Man streak going on. I want to keep that intact. And Mr. Backshots over here. Better segments, Sammy and Angle or Hollywood Rock MJF? Those are both great. Oh, I'd love to see either one of those. But me personally, that's a tough one. That's tough. I would go Hollywood Rock MJF, but Sami Zayn and Kurt Angle, I think, could, like, classic Kurt and current Sammy. I think that would be gold. I think that would be gold. I do. Fernando Abreu has a late super chat coming in. Just coming home from the show. Yeah, we got people now who are coming home from the show who are first settling in. Who are probably like, are you still live on the air? I thought you'd be done by now. It says, just coming home from the show. I thought the opening hour and some change of the show was particularly great with the exception of the TBS match. Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the review, I said from the main card, those first two matches were excellent. And then that streak came to a screeching halt with the TBS title match. But they look, to be fair to them, and I didn't think the match was great, but they were put in an impossible position coming after those first two matches. I mean, the level of quality in those two matches and then that one, I mean, you talk about falling off a cliff. It's almost just unfair. Dr. Dakota Scorpio coming in hot with a $3 super chat. To think that we got two interim women's champions within 2 months while the real champion is hurt for the last 3 months so far, not blaming Rosa, this is on Tony Khan. I said, I've never been a fan of the interim title nonsense. I mean, I understand why he wants to do it. You know, he's following the whole UFC blueprint, but I just think to keep doing it, it's just stupid. Thirsting Howell the Third, formerly Tripod. If you had to do a live watch along with a comically bad main event, like War Games 2000, Russo's Revenge, what would it be? A comically bad main event? Or just a bad main event? I already did a live review for a bad main event 3 years ago after Hell in a Cell. Rather not talk about that. I don't know. I mean, there's probably lots of options. probably a lot of Russo content from WCW that year, year and a half, whatever it was that he was in charge. It's hard to narrow it down. There's more good wrestling to do watch-alongs for than bad wrestling. I'd rather focus on the good. The Yatagaratsu is joining us and dropping a 10 spot. I very much appreciate all the love tonight, guys. We had a very slow night last night. It was kind of depressing how, it was a good SmackDown too, but it was like nobody cared. And to see all the love tonight, I very much appreciate it. He says, "Yo, Solomonster, the master of cynicism, what's up? Do you think Jade will hit her stride, or will she end up being the female Tom McGee of AEW with a championship run?" I don't think she'll be the female Tom McGee. I think she'll end up being a star. I don't know if she'll be the star they want her to be, but I definitely think that she's made improvements from where she was even at the beginning of the year. I know she's been working behind the scenes with Bryan Danielson a lot. He's a great guy to learn from. I think that she is going to make it. We have got Lovely. Is Big Dick Dudley the best wrestling name? I don't know. We got Dick the Cock Johnson here in the super chats and in the live chat. That's a pretty tough name to beat. Big Dick Dudley is one of the best ones, right? They had Dances with Dudley. That one always pops me. A very simple one, Just Joe. Whenever somebody would walk up to him in the back and they would say, "Who are you?" He'd be like, "Oh, I'm just Joe." Come on, you know that was funny. We should put a list together of the best wrestling names, though. We talk so much about the worst wrestling names, most of which have come out of the WWE developmental system, but we should also show some love for the best names. Miguel in the chat says, "Nick Houseman keeps asking about Colt Cabana and CM Punk." Is he asking about that at the media scrum? I forgot there's a media scrum that is either going on or just ended. I have to go back and... That's another thing I'm going to have to do before the show tomorrow. See if there was anything that took place in the media scrum. I imagine the media scrum was not nearly as eventful as the last media scrum. Let's go ahead, because we smashed our leg goal tonight. I don't want to keep you guys up any longer, so let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here they are. They tried for the Trios titles tonight. They were not successful. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. It is time to be the booker. Be the booker. Do you notice Booker T on NXT this week was extra booker? He was out of his mind on Tuesday. So let's kick things off here with the men's Be the Booker. This might be the latest Be the Booker that we've ever done. 2:30 in the morning. Let's see what we can come up with here. Let's see what magic we can come up with on a Sunday morning. We begin with The Undertaker. Ministry Undertaker. Not just any Undertaker. Ministry Undertaker. My least favorite version of The Undertaker. Although his music was badass. But the character and the faction, boring as shit. Ministry Undertaker going to go one-on-one with CM Punk. Now, we got Undertaker and Punk in a WrestleMania match, but Ministry Undertaker against CM Punk, I'm not sure that would be better than the match they had, frankly, at WrestleMania 29. But that is a big match. That is a big match. Flip on over to the ladies. See if we can book ourselves here. We begin. Oh. Hit the wrong button. This is how you can tell it's 2:30 in the morning, because I'm hitting buttons and I don't know what they do. I haven't even picked a woman yet and I'm already giving it the buzzer. That's not fair. See, that's not fair. I think now that's a good sign that we're going to land on a good match here. We begin with Alicia Fox. Well, I guess I lied. Well, let's finish it out here. Alicia Fox. Gonna go one-on-one with AJ Lee. I'll be fair. I'm feeling generous. I'm an AJ Lee fan. So I will kindly give that the bell. I'll be nice. Let's try the tag teams here. Oh, would you look at that? We got the Midnight Express. We got Sweet Stan Lane. We got Beautiful Bobby Eaton. We got Jim Cornette. Midnight Express. Toe-to-toe. With the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers. That's some good old-school classic wrestling right there. I feel like that would be actually a very good match. Back in the mid-80s. Rougeau's and the Midnight Express. I like it. That gets a thumbs up from me. And Dr. Dakota Scorpio says, that guy with that punk owns Buck sign looks kind of silly now. I didn't even notice him. Honestly, I didn't even notice that guy. Yeah, Groovy Goose, I have to agree. It's actually not been a bad month of Be the Booker. This might be maybe the best, and we're not done yet, but this might be the best month of Be the Booker that we've done yet. Or one of the best. We've been doing Be the Booker for over 2 years, so I'm sure we've had some other good months as well. All right, so I think I've gone through all of your super chats, I hope. I don't think I've missed anybody. So again, I want to thank you all for the support. I also want to remind, because I haven't mentioned it all night, but I do want to mention the fact that there is a sale going on right now on Pro Wrestling Tees, and it's not just for our store. It's for all the stores on there, just FYI. But if you want to pick up a Sound Off shirt, including our new 15-year anniversary shirt, you get 20% off. So if you want to get some money off, now would be the time. You don't need a code. You just go to prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff, pick the shirt, and you can get your discount. So go ahead and check that out. Again, I'm going to be back live with you Monday night. We'll be back here kicking off Thanksgiving week with the Monday Night Raw stream. But we are first going to be doing Sound Off episode 783 later today. I have no idea when I'm going to start recording. So this could be a late one. So if you are usually waiting for the podcast to drop early afternoon, you might be waiting a while. I don't want to go too late because it's a big day. It is the series finale of The Walking Dead. And they're doing this whole big event tomorrow night, red carpet treatment before the episode, 90-minute episode. I feel like I'm one of the few who has stuck with the show since day one, so I am looking forward to the finale tomorrow night. I want to be all free and clear to watch that and enjoy that. So hopefully we won't record too late, but going to be a very busy day. So I hope you'll download the show when it drops. We have a lot to talk about. Be well. Stay safe. I'm going to see you back here live Monday night for the Raw stream. Thank you for all the super chats. Hit that like button on your way out. And I'll see you back here for more Sound Off very soon. Until then, take care, guys.